There we go.
Oh my god. We got all the Stooges, all the Pythons here. But no, really, we just got a bunch of comedy lovers here. We got Gil Palmer back in the house.
Hello.
Ready to rock
and roll. Hello, Gil.
Mike, NSYNC, NSYNC. How are you, buddy?
I'm all right.
All right.
This is on the eve of working at Comic-Con, so I'm looking...
Yeah, I can't believe you're working those panels, but that's great.
Well, I'll probably be a bouncer or something. I'll find out.
You'll probably find a few dead parrots at the entrance, but that's up for debate. So Tom and JJ, the usual duo, are also back.
And now for something completely
different. For the fjords.
The pitons.
The fjords.
Stop that. That's silly. I'm your host, Sully, and we are going to do a three-parter on the pythons. We were back and forth. Mike was like, maybe we could do two parts, and James was like, nope, it's got to be a three-parter. There's so much, it's so dense, it's so detailed. And I'm obliged. We've been talking about it for a while, and we're way overdue, and it was just like, yeah, let's just sum up this great comedy act and the history of how so many people got into it, and just the other related acts and kind of rough stages and everything, and why the BBC didn't know what to make of it, and then Americans were slow to warm up to it, and just, now it's an international hit. You can't think of anyone who really hates them now.
It's kind of strange because when you think about where it all begins, it begins with a show that they listened to back in the 50s called The Goon Show.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. which was Peter Sellers, Spike Milligan, Harry Secombe, and Mike Benintine for the first two seasons. And that was, Michael Palin said it was like somebody listening to Heartbreak Hotel when Elvis did it.
Their kind of national lampoon in a way, I guess.
Mm-hmm. No, it was a show that they had shows like Much Binding Around the Marsh and Around.
I just mean that they listened to audio kind of it and they just passed it around kind of.
Well, the thing was that the show, The Goon Show, was so absurdist because a lot of BBC comedies back then on the radio were kind of like very staid and very like, you know, predictable things. Mm. Here comes the show by Spike Milligan, Peter Sellers, and Harry Secombe. And, you know, Michael Benintine, as I said before, where it's just basically all these characters come out of the freaking woodwork. And it's like somebody says, and they have all these characters like, you know, Blue Bottle and Harry and, you know, Henry Seagoon and, you know, Eccles. And I would recommend everybody to listen to The Goon Show when they have the chance, because it's
was it funny. Just a radio?
What was that?
It had TV too, didn't it? I mean, you're talking about the audio, or
yeah,
it was a radio show apparently. But
yeah,
the Telegoons, which was kind of a puppet show.
I've heard a little bit of them. It was very funny what I heard.
Yeah,
there was something like, "I'll kill that fat donkey," and he did. You know, you hear this, and then and he did.
My favorite one. My favorite part of The Goon Show is like when they have a person on there called Dennis Bloodknock, who is a
quite a name.
He's an English army captain, and all he does is like he has the world's worst stomach in the world. So it's like, oh Nash, the screens. Oh no more cutting eggs for me. You know, it was all the voice they did, and it was all these. It was just an imagination that they were kind of like pulling around this world that they lived in. So that was the Pythons. This is Chapman, Jones, Cleese, Idle, and Palin.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is them in England.
I know they kind of did that with the UK Who's Line. So this is kind of cool to know that they were inspired by the radio. So they performed on radio plays first.
Yeah. And then what happened was that Terry Gilliam was in the United States, and he was a kid raised in Minnesota, and he was, you know, he kind of like loved Ernie Kovacs and, you know, all these, like, you know, he would just, you know, he loved animation and stuff like that. So, you know, that's his foray into getting into absurd
Yeah, and I loved how he was in every documentary. He'd always say people thought he was on drugs when he just had a very zany imagination.
Yeah. So
and it was always mind-boggling how Graham Chapman was kind of the unofficial leader, and prior to comedy, he had wanted to be a doctor, and is like, yeah. What? How does?
Well,
how does
I realize that? They were children of that war generation. You know, so the wireless was their way, and then you know, if you got a TV back then, you know, you got to see stuff on television. Mm-hmm. Then the 1950s give way to the 1960s, and that's where the satire boom begins in England. So the big guys' satire were Beyond the Fringe, and that was Peter Cook, Dudley Moore, Alan Bennett, and Jonathan Miller. Here they were skewing English life as they knew it, you know, where they would do these sketches that were like, you know, just, you know,
That's cool.
Peter Cook had the biggest pair of balls in the world because Harold Wilson was the prime minister at the time, and he used to do an imitation of Harold Wilson. So one day, Harold Wilson went down to the place that they were doing the show, the review, Beyond the Fringe, and he did Harold Wilson in front of Harold Wilson.
How did that go, dare I ask?
I think people were kind of laughing, but it was kind of like that, like,
whoa.
The front row, you know. And also with that, you know, the satire boom's going on, and then you've got Chapman and Cleese going to, I think they went to Oxford or Cambridge. No, they were in Cambridge.
Oh, wow.
Or Oxford. I don't know. You went to two colleges. You went to Oxford and you went to Cambridge. So,
well, the teams were kind of split between the two colleges, but I can't remember.
There was Cambridge Footlights and the Oxford Review. And you had to do something to get into the review. And Chapman, I think, played a man who was being pulled by a magnet. And did something really funny. And then with Palin, Jones, and Idle, they went to the Cambridge Footlights. Yeah, okay. So they were kind of like, so, you know, they go to this, there was this comedy festival every year in England. And, you know, they were both there, the Cambridge Review and the Oxford Footlight. So what happens is that the Oxford Review stayed in England. Cambridge Footlights went to Broadway. So Cleese was playing on Broadway. Mm. But what happened is that there was a guy in the audience who would always watch for people. And that guy was David Frost. And if you guys know who David Frost was, he was an interviewer, but he had a show on.
He's like Johnny Carson, a great
boy. Vaguely recognizing him.
And then there was a Frost Nixon movie, you know.
The Frost Report, and then he had That Was the Week That Was.
Yeah.
And he hired the five of them to write on his show. But the thing was, back then, if you were a writer on the show, you had like 70 people writing for David Frost. So at the end of this, there's a sketch they do called Tim Williams Coffee Time, where all the stuff is being like route, and he just like people would be like, people, I think Michael Palin says, is my dad saw him. He says, saw your name there in the Frost Report. Yeah, 5 seconds of it, you know, just, you know, because he had all these people writing for him. And that was 64-65, I think, going to 66. And then that's going on. And then I think after that, you know, the Frost Report was up there. So then ITV creates two shows. One of them is called At Last, the 1948 Show.
Mm.
And that's John Cleese, Graham Chapman, Marty Feldman, and Tim Brooke Taylor.
That's one of the ones that I'm aware of. It's the only one from before Monty Python that I was able to watch a few episodes of, but I never saw like the Frost Report stuff or any of that.
Is it any of it on cassette or DVD or online?
At Last, the 48 Show was on DVD, I know, at one time. And I think it might even be on digital now.
I think I've seen that one, but hey, yeah, that's cool. And
do not adjust your set.
Yeah,
adjust your set. That was a kid show, right?
That was the show. That was David Jason, Michael Palin, Eric Idle, Terry Jones, the Bonzo Doodog Band, Denise Coffey. And they had Harry Gilliam joined in the second season to do the cartoons.
Wow.
And Terry Gilliam had already worked with John Cleese on a thing where he was a salesman who falls in love with his daughter's Barbie doll for Harvey Kurtzman's first magazine after Help called Help. And it was basically there's this thing, this is Italian word where it's basically all done with like words and like expressions and cutouts and stuff like that. So that was Gilliam's first, you know, meeting for them, you know, to get in touch with him. So those two shows are Do Not Adjust Your Set was a kid show. All right. And the adults were tuning in to watch it after school, I mean, after work. Because it's on like 5 p.m. And that has like some really funny stuff in it. And then At Last, the 1948 show has the bookstore sketch. And excuse me, do you have Ethel the Aardvark goes quantum surveying? And then they do the Four Yorkshiremen sketch, which is a holdover. Probably it wasn't a Python sketch; it was a At Last, the 1948 that they would put into their stage shows later.
It's wild how it's kind of like when people misquote certain movies or shows. It's like that's not exactly the quote, but it's somewhat similar. And yeah, seeing the origin of the certain skits, let alone the running gags and just the modus operandi of the writing room, is just always just amazing, because people just think, oh yeah, you just randomly started doing that. I'm like, well, no. Not right away, at least.
No.
You get into the groove as you go along and decide you want to do this.
The thing was that those two shows ran their course, I think, after two seasons. And then Cleese put out Cleese put out a show called How to Annoy People.
Yep.
Which was How to Irritate People. A great, great, great skit from the 70s.
Yeah.
We constantly rented it. I think we owned the VHS finally. It's just very easy to come by. I'm sure it's a DVD transfer now, or you can find it on YouTube, but it's just, that's pretty much, you're seeing, I mean, Chapman and Palin are in it, but Cleese is just awesome showing how he's kind of a good at leading some of the skits, or being the straight man, or the stopping point, so to speak, in the sketch.
And then he does that, and then Jones and Palin do a show called The Complete and Utter History of Britain, which is basically like, what if cameras were at like certain points in history? Like, you know, they're interviewing, like, you know, after the Battle of Hastings.
So before we did the mockumentary or even Drunk History, we're getting like unofficial news crew covering classic battles.
Yeah, they're like, well, how was it out there? You know, how was it out there? Well, it was kind of tough out there. You know, we did lose some archers and we lost some men out there. But you know,
a U.S. series called You Are There that was pretty much the same concept.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah,
yeah. Back but in it was like more like a news program, but they would, like you were in all kinds of things in history.
Colin Mockery was in something similar, but his hour has like 22 minutes, so it is kind of interesting seeing. Just basically a running formula, if you will, and then enhancing it, evolving it, transforming it, and then but I think, would you say these guys, but what was really keeping them together the most time? Because that's kind of one thing I haven't gotten from all the documentaries, knowing why they stayed together and took a chance.
What it was that they didn't get together till early 1969, because it was kind of like, I think it was Cleese and Chapman and Palin and Jones and Idle were kind of like talking to each other and saying, look, you know, want to have our lot join your lot, and we'll get Terry Gilliam to do the animation. Mm. Now the thing was that before Python had gone on air yet, before they had done anything, Spike Milligan had a show called Q5.
Oh, yes.
Q5. Yeah. Go ahead, Gil.
No, I was just gonna say, yeah, I saw clips of it from the documentary. I hadn't had a chance to see it, but it looked like it was very much like a Monty Python type of thing.
It was Monty Python. It was Spike Milligan basically taking his absurd ideas and putting them on in front of television. He'd done a bunch before. He'd done a show called Fred, and son of a show called Fred, and Spike Milligan at like a higher price value, you know, some of these really good sketch shows that were funny. But the thing was that I think they went up to the head of BBC, the light, which they called Light Entertainment, and said, you know what, there's the five of us. We want to put a show together and have it ready for the fall. We can't think of a name. I think some of the names they put around were Gwen Dibley's Flying Circus, Owl Stretching Time, a bucket, a buzzard, and a lizard. You know, all these strange titles. And they said, we came with the name Monty Python Flying Circus. And there's a theory that I think Eric Idle said that he'd be at the bar and this guy would come around and he's kind of like a show business type. He said, hello, has Monty been in? Monty. And like they dealt with a lot of showbiz types, so that's Python. And Flying Circus just is like something like, you know, so off the cuff. So they thought that up and they were like, okay, we'll call ourselves Monty Python Flying Circus. And they were kind of introduced as like this like show that's, you know, it's kind of gonna be buried in the back end of the BBC. You know, we don't know what's
where we're going.
Made it.
Yeah.
Real
quick, in Goldfinger, there's Pussy Galore's Flying Circus.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember? But yeah. I always wonder if they picked it up from that, you know?
From James Bond.
I'm seeing it was like 64, and it was in the... Maybe Flying Circus is in the British lexicon, but I do... When I watched... First time I saw Goldfinger, oh, that's where they got that. Maybe not, but... It's a
good question to ask. Yeah,
I want to say that Flying Circus was a reference to like World War One airplanes or aircraft.
Okay, so it'd been around over there. Yeah. Okay.
So that whole thing kind of gelled together, and they were like writing. They didn't know what to do. I mean, like, they would come up with sketches, and the writing, the way they were, the writing was like Idle would write by himself. Idle would do these like bits that were just like so off the wall. Jones and Palin would do their bits, and then Chapman and Cleese would do their bits, and then they'd all kind of talk together, and it was kind of like, okay, I would do this, okay, put that in there, or something like that. The thing with Chapman and Cleese was, Chapman would say something so off the wall during a thing like, I don't know, mongoose or something like that, and it would like that would catch over, you know.
Man.
But when I think about it, you can tell in those when that first series hit, and it hits in October of 69. Watch the first couple episodes. It kind of gets lost on the crowd, the humor.
Yeah.
They're not quite warming up to it.
They don't know what to make of it. There are some funny bits in those first, like, four or five episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's why they would always have, like, the Women's Institute applause, the old ladies clapping.
Yeah.
Because it was so fucking, it was just so silly to watch.
You know, it just reminds you of the whole... when you're doing theater and it's like, oh, a performance your parents would be proud of.
Yeah.
In watching the show again, any of you guys remember Rube Goldberg?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
That sounds familiar.
There's a very Rube Goldberg-like structure to the show. Some point A leads to point B. It's all in the to make a joke. But there'd be a thread throughout every show, and they'd all connect, kind of like Rube Goldberg's drawing. It's just he's kicking a shoe over, and they'd have this elaborate cartoon. But it's the same type of style, and especially with Gilliam's animation.
And yeah.
It was really inventive how they adapted that Rube Goldberg idea. And I don't know if it was intentional or not, but I definitely see it every time I watch. Oh, okay. Anytime I watch a an episode, I catch that. It's That's really wild. Neat. And it's the movies as well. Stuff just like Holy Grail or Life of Brian is watching, and also the spaceship flies in, you know. It's really, you don't know where it's going to go next. And that's the fun of it.
Yeah. And the thing was, the first episode, I think it's the first or second episode, like, there's a great sketch they do called Famous Deaths, where it's Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart face, like, introducing, like, the world's most famous death. So they have, like, we have the death of Genghis Khan. You see this guy walk out of a tent, like, in Mongolian warrior gear. And also, he, like, just goes, and dies of a heart attack.
Yes.
And they played so well on records, too. You can mm-hmm. imagine it in your head, like, the death of Mary Queen of Scots.
Scots, yes.
Yeah. I'm not dead. I think she's dead. No, I'm not. You know, they continue the chaos. You know, it plays well audio-wise, too, a lot of times. You know.
Yes, it does.
I'm sorry. But the thing was that, like, there's so many sketches in that first season. Now, the first episode airs, and Palin was when they filmed the beginning, Palin was at a beach, and they told him, go out in the water and come in. And he went a little too far out, and I think he almost drowned from what I can remember.
Oh, man.
And he
playing the old guy, the It's guy?
Yeah, the It's. He comes out and goes, okay. He just goes, It's. Like, yeah. Like, they didn't know what to do. Like, it was just like, it's just like this guy kind of going, it's, and you hear bong, and you hear the Liberty Bell march, and it's Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Yeah.
And then it cut to Graham Chapman sitting down, you hear a pig squeal, and then it cuts to a guy with a blackboard, like, crossing out a pig. And then they did a sketch where it was teaching Italian, but the thing was, it wasn't, like, Terry Jones is the professor, but he's teaching Italian to Italian people. and Graham Chapman stands up and says, my beta man here, those are the classrooms. Oh, you want to be down the hall. Ah, Gott in Himmel. The thing was that like Eric, and Eric Idle said this. He said like he would play football with his friends on a Sunday. Right, and he'd be like, "I saw your show the other night. This is what happens. Like, saw your show the other night. Pretty good. Didn't laugh too much, but pretty good." And then this time, they were going to go, "Oh man, we were on the floor rolling hysterical, you know, rolling on the floor hysterics." So, what happened was that the show started to gain ground with that first season. And there's so many good sketches in that first season. I think, Mike, you just have the back on where they do the Undertakers, like every sketch with the Undertakers in it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they kept cutting to that, yep. And they keep dropping the coffin, walking down the street, yep.
They have the they have the one with Jimmy Buzzard being interviewed. It's like, well, how'd you do tonight? He says, I hit the ball net, was in the back of the net. He's like, I hit the ball and it was about back to the net. He's like this, the Cleese is playing with this dumb football player. He's like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Evening, Brian.
Evening, Brian.
They're in weird kind of rugby kind of clothes. Just...
Yeah, yeah. Oh, they do, what is it? The one with the Scotsman, the blancmange turning all the English people into Scotsmen so they can.
Oh, that's right, yeah. That's a good one.
Yes,
yeah.
Kamikaze Scotsman.
No, that's later. That's later.
Oh, okay. They built that up to that one.
It's these cannibals from the planet Skyron in the Andromeda galaxy. They've invaded Earth. They're turning all the English people, all the Englishmen into Scotsmen. And what they decide to do is they just do they mean to do? They mean to win Wimbledon. So it's up to Agnes. It's up to Agnes Podgorny to defeat the blancmange. But everybody knows Scotland is the worst tennis playing nation on the face of the earth. Man. And what happens is that earlier in the show, there's a, this is Mr. and Mrs. Samuel Brain Sample, and they are on their and who, but they're not important right now. No. there's a lot of, I mean, there's the self defense sketch, you know.
How to defend yourself. Yes. Oh my God, it's like a very bad karate session.
And they do really good things, like, you know, they do some really funny, like these really one-off, like, blackout sketches where it's like, yes, it's a man's life here in England's rustic green. Like, and the colonel walks in and says, stop that, that's rather silly. He says, what about my rustic monologue? Cleese turns and says, not sleeping with that producer again.
yeah, the sides are classic, too.
Those are great.
Come in real quick.
Some of them are almost as zany as Chappelle's Show and In Living Color. Like, I know those shows are more urban and different kinds of like a very diverse cast and everything, but I'm sure someone saw something like that on like A&E or the Dallas PBS stations where a lot of these skits were being transmitted from. Were there other places where Monty Python was being accessed through back in the day?
No, I think the BBC was the only one you could get it through. And if you were to get anything, it would be, probably be BBC. You know, it was BBC One, because those first shows, the 1948 show, and what was the other one? Do Not Just Your Set, were London Weekend Television, and they were like the upstart network. So the BBC was kind of like the only place you could go to see Python, you know?
So I guess it was the 90s where A&E started licensing it, I guess.
I watched it on PBS in the early 70s.
It was
a hip show to talk about.
We knew they started off in the 70s. We're wondering then where you would have gotten it in video rental days.
Only on the BBC. The BBC would only transmit it in England. And I think some parts of Europe, because I know they did, I know later they would do two shows in Germany. One was fully in German, and the other one was kind of like, you know, they kind of did another show where it was English.
Yeah, but they're in the box set. Yeah, those two shows. But yeah. I'm thinking 74 it started airing here.
It sounds about right. Definitely would have been after. Sorry, go ahead. Go. Sorry.
Oh, no, it's just. In Iowa, we had it on Iowa Public Television here.
I have some family friends in Iowa. And I don't know about you. Big Python heads. Yeah.
And I don't know about you, Thomas, but like that was around the same time that Saturday Night Live was getting started. And I remember watching, you know, and Saturday Night Live would come on after the news. Well, no kid wants to watch the news. I'm like, what, 70? It was 75 or 76. So I was 7 or 8. And it's like, I don't want to watch the news, so I'm like flipping channels, and didn't have cable back then, but then I stumbled across Iowa Public Television and Monty Python is playing on that. So I'm like, so every Saturday night it would be Monty Python and then Saturday Night Live. That's how I used to watch.
It seems like we had it on Sunday night, but it's probably the local channel decided when to air it. Yeah.
Well, here in Jersey, I'm talking like this is the early 80s when public television was still, you know, we got it on WLIW and Channel 13 because Channel 13 would run it on a Saturday and then they went over to LIW, and LIW was the Long Island station. So they'd run it from 11 o'clock to 11:30 because they would have a whole Britcom block. And that was
syndicated then,
Yeah. Okay. And
much like the Muppet Show
They'd run it in order, and then what happened was MTV got a hold of it, and they were running it in like the late 80s. And then what happened was that they were introducing it, and then it kind of fell off the face of the earth for a while, and then A&E got a hold of it. So with all of us here, I think we got it like in the early 70s or late 80s, you know, or mid to late
80s. Circulate those tapes.
Yeah. It got to be like this underground thing, but and the first season when you watch it, you don't you when you're a kid, you don't realize they were airing a lot of the shit out of order. So it would be like you'd have an episode from season two, then an episode from season one, then an episode from season three, then an episode from season four, then an episode from season two. So they had a lot of the BBC, when you read the chronological order of things, they had it set at certain points, you know, like boom, boom, boom,
so
boom,
some
boom,
of
boom,
the
boom.
Skits with the end hermit coming out at the end, you know, that makes sense. There were some times where I'm like, did I miss something? Probably.
So then what happens is this, the way it was done was, the first season ends on kind of a high note for them because they do the intermission sketch, the intermission show. There'll be a whopping great intermission. And there's some great sketches that, you know, upper class twit of the year, I'm trying to think, the dead parrot sketches that first season, the deja vu sketches that first season, you know, there's one flying lessons where Terry Jones walks in and there's Graham Chapman suspended on wires. I've come here for flying lessons. All right, get up on the table.
No, you got a wire. I've just watched that one. You got a wire there. Yeah. No, hey. No. Yeah. And then he put a hoop around himself to prove it. And the hoop's got a break in it. You know,
A break in one's hoop. Oh, pardon me, mate, while I go play the grand piano. They have the one sketch I love with the guys wanting to, it looks like they're going to plan a robbery, but they're actually going to go and buy a watch.
Oh, my God.
Robbers break in and roll off the newscaster and throw it in the bay. Yep, I just saw that one too.
That's one of my favorite ones.
They're so dense. There's so much going on, and they're quick, but they're so solid, you know.
That's what it was. The writing was just like, they could do one sketch where it's just, you know, it's just one silent thing going on.
Yeah.
You know, like the one where it's Idol's playing like this fop. And he gets out. They strip him down like he's in a sedan chair, right? So they strip him down. You know, take his, and he goes on. They're at the ocean, and he looks around. He looks around, gets back in the sedan chair, and they like go into the ocean.
Yeah,
with him in the sedan chair.
Mentioned the Twit of the Year. Wasn't that, I read somewhere that was based on one of the pythons. There was a bunch of drunken revelers that would come in on the weekends and wake him up, and they based the skit on him as being was it Graham Chapman? Yeah, they based him on being the twist.
I think it was Graham Chapman.
Or was it the Gumbies?
The Gumbies were, I think, the guys they knew who were still like, you know, they still had their loudmouth opinions, you know, like,
come over here, you bastard. Yeah.
You know, the Gumbies and the Pepper Pots were always my two favorite things to watch. Like the Gumbies, when they like they come in and they're like, he's like, oh, I think I'm no racialist, but it doesn't mean I want to eat squirrels now, do I? I mean, one or two once in a while, but that's it. And then they have the one where it says the battle of the Magna Carta. Was it one of the most, or was it just a chewing gum stain on a bedsheet somewhere in Cudworth? And they're interviewing like Professor R.J. Gumby. And he's like, I think that's, you know, the Battle of Trafalgar.
Yeah,
it's the Battle of Trafalgar. Yeah, and
it's so wild how they're kind of abandoned by their own country. Americans, we slowly start integrating it into our culture, and it's just
I was just gonna say, someone gets lost in translation.
I can't imagine,
you know it's funny,
but you can't imagine 60s and 70s, you know, TV without this.
They did a sketch,
yeah,
or the Monkees.
They did a sketch that was they did a sketch that was really funny. It's the one where the cop comes in, he's like, you like, he's knocking on the door, and he's like, it's like, door's open. I have reason to believe that there is a illicit substance somewhere on the premises. What? Illicit substance of a certain nature. What do you mean? What do you mean? What do you got? You are Sandy Kemp, the actor. Yes. Have you know that the outside is a dual another constable with police dog Josephine, who is not only a good dog sniffer but a trained junkie. And he pulls out a bag and he goes, oh, what have we here? And it's supposed to be a play on. There was this guy, Sergeant Pilcher, who was this guy who busted like Donovan, then he busted the Stones.
Oh, and then wow. I didn't know there was a backstory to that skit.
Yeah. John Lennon, I think. George Harrison.
He busted John Lennon. He got, I think they were going to get.
Just a nosy cop.
He was a dirty cop.
So he was found to be corrupt, yeah. Yeah.
A bad cop on the loose? Say it's not so.
I always just thought they were just creating a mega villain, so there you go. Wow.
But it wasn't that. I mean, I love the way they portray the police as like a bunch of like either like just morons.
Poopers, or, yeah.
Oh yeah, when they're just like it's not like there's sketches like I love when like they do like the police are going to use fairy wands.
Yes.
You know. The criminal noise is a superstitious one. Good evening, and believing that we're good evening. Good evening, says, scare the fertilizer out of him. Says, just what are the police up to? Well, I'm up to page 5, where Peter Pan first manifests himself. and there's this part where they're around the Ouija board, and they're going, UPYOURS.
Oh, man.
Up yours. What a good Ouija board.
A lot of mocking the British Royal Guards who are just standing in place. I mean, the whole point of the fish slapping dance is literally just being an urchin trying to get a rise out of a guy, and then finally he slaps him with a bigger fish into a pond.
But the thing was, again, there's so much going on.
You can easily recreate them just like the dead parrot one that they did on SNL, but then at the same time, like, I think just the reason they were part of so many ensembles, you know, Eric Idle and Cleese especially found no problems being part of giant ensembles. Even their failed movies, like, you know, Eric the Viking and Yellowbeard are worth a watch just because they're united with so many, you know, international comedians like Cheech and Chong and everybody. And you're just like, see, they get a lot. All these comedians love each other because they speak the language that is humor. Like, they're all wired differently, but they all speak the same language of we want to put on a show.
Well, the thing that got me the most is like that first season. It's like they go out on such a great upswing, you know.
Even skits that aren't funny are worth a watch just because the way they're wired is just very you just feel very warped out of your seat. Like you're seeing something that you can't explain. So.
Yeah, it's just like, what the hell is going on?
Am I on drugs?
And I wouldn't be amiss to say that Terry Gilliam's animation connects a lot of stuff together that first season. There's one part where, like, you see this woman going, sit down, and she keeps slapping the kid. Sit down, like that. And there's ones like, you know, like, there's ones where a guy, like, you know, saws his, like, you see that a bandsaw come out of the head, and you see the thing come up, and he goes, "Help me! Help me! I'm trapped in here! Help me! Help me! Help me!"
Then the leaves jumping off the tree in autumn. Remember that?
From
Meaning of Life. Yeah.
Well, that's right. Yeah. I mean, I confuse the movies with the show sometimes.
Well,
I'd like to have an argument, please.
Yeah.
I mean, you know you made it when there's so many action figures of. Both the movies, Brian and Holy Grail, as well as from the show, is like you see people with coffee mugs of these now. It's just that's how
you're never going to see. You're never going to see an Eric Praline action figure with a dead parrot. Him wearing a Mac coming. You know, you pull a string. He goes, "This parrot is dead. It is no more." Now, if you watch that sketch, it went further than it should have. Remember they were doing that, and I think they did the lumberjack sketch was I think the first season. Yeah, that first season, because that's
first season.
Yeah, do the lumberjack sketch, then they do that, then they do the one where the guy's like the nervous barber.
No, that's what leads up. That's what leads into the
lumberjack song. Yeah. I never wanted to be a bower. I always wanted to be a lumberjack. And then that cuts into one of the best nonverbal sketches they ever did, which was the hunters going out on a hunt.
Yes, we're on the hunt.
And then it cuts. Then that leads into the rude guests coming over, it's Carol Cleveland and Graham Chapman, and they're like this romantic couple, and all of a sudden Eric Idle comes. Remember me, the one from the bar? Yeah. Okay. Well, seeing that the Film Society was canceled, I thought I might come over and talk. And he's like. He tells this one, he goes, what's brown and sounds like a bell? Cleese and Terry Jones come in. It's like this like really obnoxious couple. He says, my name's Brian Aquaia, much around the earth, only with an L. And like Jones plays this like shrieking, laughing wife.
he's always like, had him in drag.
and then all of a sudden he says, well, that'd be some friends of mine that he's just lost his wife. And and Gilliam comes in like this flamboyant gay outfit. He says, oh, what a simply ghastly place. He's like, well, how are you, old poof? And it's like you can't get away with a sketch like that today.
No.
And then
no.
He says,
and how often they were on drag a lot too.
Remember? Yeah, they were.
Yeah, they like to play.
Yeah,
I like to play ugly women, all right.
They were equal opportunity, but it was also Connie Booth, who later married Cleese for a bit, entered some of the skits. Well, I just love how they always had a...
Who was the Connie Booth? I'm trying to remember who... He was married to
Carol
somebody.
Cleveland.
Faulty Towers?
Yeah, yes.
Connie Booth was on Faulty Towers, and she was in a couple of the sketches, but... The girl who's always been the one that the pythons love to use as the glamour stooge, and not only that, she was really good in some sketches where she played like a nurse or something like that, was Carol Cleveland. Carol Cleveland was a model and an actress. She'd been on an episode of The Saint. She'd done a couple of shows before, a couple of spots on TV shows, and she was the one that the pythons wanted because they couldn't do all the stuff drag all the time, so she was brought in to be like the glamour stooge. But she does carry some sketches where she's like, she really does good. Like in the second season, she does the Spanish Inquisition.
Yes. Oh my god.
Trouble Up Mill. What? Trouble Up Mill. What are you talking about? One of the skews got out on treadle. What? One of the skews got out on the treadle. What does that mean? I didn't know Mr. Barkinson told me to come in here and just say that. I wasn't getting some sort of Spanish Inquisition.
No one expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah, my God. And I just like how pretty much every sketch starts with like a nutty reason for why the person's here in the first place, or they're basically being socially prosecuted by some other student.
Well, the second season gets to be after that first season, they've stretched their legs a bit. And they'd done, I think Chapman and Cleese had done The Magic Christian the year before, so that came out. Then what happened was that they stretched their legs, they were gonna get ready, they were working on season two.
Mm.
And season two is, I think, like the definitive season for them. And I know this is gonna be like, where we stop, but that second season is just dynamite. So wacky. They have, the ministry.
And they're showing improvement while also just really just going for it.
Yeah. The Ministry of Silly Walks, the Election Night Special.
I remember the Election Night Special, and I feel like a lot of that has definitely inspired stuff like The Daily Show in a way.
Yeah. The one I always remember is the Spanish Inquisition. The one where they play charades in the courtroom. World Forum, where they have Mao Zedong, Karl Marx, Vladimir Lenin, and Che Guevara playing like the Hammers. The Hammers are the name of what
English football team.
Bahamas? And then they go, Betty Clark and Tommy Dixon had a nice, and also Mao Zedong, sing the rhythm, buddy? Right, that's right. That's good, Mao Zedong. Now our guest tonight will be Karl Marx. Now, Karl, you have, stated your names of workers' control of class, and tonight you'll be playing for this beautiful lounge suite. Now, are you nervous, Karl? Good. The struggle between class versus class is a political struggle. Right. Good, Carl. You're on your way to that lounge suite. Now, the industrial bourgeoisie. Good. Now, here's your third question. Charlton City last won the FA Cup in what year? the workers on the means of production. The struggle of the urban proletariat. No, that's wrong, Carl. Charlton City never won the FA Cup. They do a sketch where art goes on strike. So it's all these paintings and stuff go on strike.
Oh my word! Yeah.
So it's like you see these two guys at an art. Oh, this is Titian's masterpiece. Yes. The brushstroke, the way the character's placed. Yes. And you see this guy walk up. He's dressed like a yoga. He's like, he knocks on. He says, "Yes, is your dad in? Yes, Dad. Who is it? It's the man from the Hayway. The constable's the Hayway to see him. Dad, it's the constable. Man from Constable's Hayway to see him. So you see God come off the perch. He's like." Oh, how you been? Been a while. Yeah, we're all struck now. Right, I'll get the impressionists together, and so they do this whole bit where it's like all these paintings just like leave.
Yeah, and this is very. Imagine doing that in animated form; it'd be so different.
Oh, and then they have one where like statues went on strike too, unanimously, except for one abstention, and it's the Venus de Milo with the arms off.
Yeah, which makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Why not, man? Why not?
Oh, go ahead.
The Piranha Brothers?
You. Oh, God. That's
sarcasm. He used sarcasm.
He's like, he's a man, but fair. Fair. I understand, Mr. Tracy, that you nailed your wife's head to a coffee table. No. And it pulls back, and she's got a friggin' a head. Like her head is nailed to a coffee table.
Yeah. All in denial and the pain they're in. I'm sure if you showed that to even a bunch of douchebags today, they'd realize how toxic they were.
it's not even like the Piranha Brothers.
It's edgy humor.
It is. Yeah, it's just so funny because you'll see all these guys kind of just, it's not just like the Stooges where they're kind of bullying each other. It's also kind of like they're speaking to the elephant in the room, kind of in a way, also, you know?
Well, the thing was with the Piranha Brothers, they had, in the first season, they had these two guys called the Vacanti Brothers, Dino and Luigi Vacanti, and they were like these Italian mobsters with their hair slicked back and the big, thick sunglasses. And like,
yeah.
Hey, Colonel, how much artillery you got? About 30 pieces. And how many men you got? About 300 paratroops and 200 foot. And how many tanks you got? He's like, we can do you in for protection, 5 and 10 a week. So what happened was that they do the Piranha Brothers, and the Piranha Brothers are supposed to be the Cray Brothers. If you ever hear about them,
I didn't realize they were the toughest gangsters in England.
By then I think they were in Wormwood Scrubs, which is like the English equivalent of Alcatraz. So what happens is this: so they do this sketch where it's like. We talked to Mrs. April O'Toole. She says,
"Oh, Kipling Road was a normal place, you know."
Really?
Yeah, yes. You know, they always would. They first they go to the walk, and then they'll put in the boot in the groin, and then these kids today, those kids then, they don't have their heads filled with this Cartesian dualism.
And then who the hell puts that in a sketch? But there's one part.
They were fearless, dude. They didn't care if someone actually kept them the next day.
There's one sketch. Terry Jones is interviewing like Graham Chapman, who was a teacher at the school the Piranha Brothers went to, So what he keeps doing is he keeps putting the microphone back on himself as the guy is talking. And then when he asks a question, he puts it back to the other guy. And you don't hear what the other guy's saying. So like, yeah. Graham Chapman's telling this, like, this great story. Like, one part, like, you know, he's like, so like, he cut a guy open and the stuff came coming out. And then he says, there's one part, you know, he's like, points up there and he points to his head like this. And he went, like, he's pointing down like that. It was, oh, it was just, they were putting all these, like, they were basically making the second album. Like, it's like when a band makes a better album than the first album,
mm-hmm.
you know. They were making this season better. And, you know, there's the Spanish Inquisition. There's the, what was the one that Raymond Luxury Yacht.
Yeah. Raymond, it looks like it spells Raymond Luxury Yacht, but it actually, it's pronounced Robert Mangrove.
And he says, and he goes, you're a very silly man and I'm not going to interview you. anti-Semitism, not at all. And besides, it's not a real nose, it's polystyrene. Give me my nose back. No, I want my nose back. No, they do. There's one sketch they do that was really good, which I love, called Archaeology Today.
Yes,
oh my god.
Oh, when he breaks into song out and trying to get taller by stacking each other up
I love how it's Jones, Palin, and Cleese, and they're all talking. He's like, how tall are you, Professor? About 6'5". Oh, very good speaking. Yes, I think you wouldn't say that, you know, 5'10" weed. He's talking to Jones, and Jones is like, All right, I slump in my chair. All right, I'm 5'10". All right, I have that. But I've had more women than both of you.
I remember
all of it, and just when they're insulting, it's just like, what? Who talks that way? Just the zany, just nutty.
I remember a skit. I don't know if it was on the TV show. It might just been on the records where they talk about how we had it rough when we were young. We had to get up every morning, clean the lake.
Oh yeah, that's the Four Yorkshiremen.
Okay, that's on the show too. Okay,
6 o'clock every morning. Get out of bed. You get out of bed 6 o'clock every morning. Beat, you know, stab myself to death. Then go outside, have a bunch of hot gravel. Work 23 hours at the mill. Come back to bed and pray that our dads wouldn't beat us, and we were happy.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
You talk to kids, young people today, and they won't believe you.
That second series, I mean, it's just like they do a whole show. It's live from the Grillo Match Snack Bar in Pennington.
Yes.
And it's like they do a prawn salad where Eric, I don't, like, everybody's dying around him, and he's just like, you know, it's like, what's that? Oh, it's a Brazilian dagger. Whoop, oop, this is she fell into the dagger. Yes, sir. Yes, okay. I mean, she fell, like, you know, Jones falls out a window.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Palin's a policeman who has a massive heart attack, you know. And then they do the Royal Society for putting things on top of other things.
They die more times than Kenny on South Park at times.
That's one of my favorite. He's like, Chef is a stuffish at Brent. So, yeah, we think the whole thing's a bit silly. Still here? Oh, well, I suppose it is. Well, meeting adjourned forever. I mean, the sketches were getting so much better.
Yeah.
And that second season to me is like kind of like where it really took off, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the last season, there's one sketch they do. What was the one I loved?
All of them.
they do the game show, open the box, and the woman's like, okay. Can you tell what is the this woman comes out, Mrs. Scum, and it's Terry Jones made up, like, this old woman, and he, like, you know, John Cleese is going, okay, can you tell me what is the main food penguins eat?
Oh, pork luncheon meat. Look at the terminal with a runnet sauce.
That's the season that has the spam sketch in it.
Okay.
Yep.
With the bite.
And it has, yeah.
Right.
It has the spam sketch in it, which is like, you know,
I first heard that on the record, and I didn't realize there were Vikings in that sketch till I saw it.
Yeah.
So, spam, spam, spam. It's even more absurd. Yeah.
I love the beginning of that episode where you think it's like, I remember first seeing it thinking it was like a real like a movie. I'm like, did Python go off the air? What the hell's going on here? And also it pans over and there's John Cleese, and that season was the introduction of the man going, and now for something completely different.
Different.
And he's like, you know, become like they do the one, Yeeps 1914, and John Cleese is brought to the, you know, he's brought to the Royal Hospital for overacting.
Yes. Oh my God. The stuff like, you can't prescribe.
I'm not a complete man. I'm not a complete man anymore because he's lost both his arms. Like the arms of his jacket are pinned to his chest. He says, and Graham Chapman goes, "Yes, you've lost both your arms, Project." Now what they do is they said, "Well, somebody's gonna have to go over and get supplies. We're gonna have to do this rock, paper, scissors. Ready? 1, 2, 3, go."
And it really was meta to have him be the doctor in the sketches also.
he knows how to play the... Graham Chapman knew how to play the military types.
Right.
Cleese knew how to play the types.
I'll never forget when he passed and they were like, we lost kind of our, you know, our invaluable leader, you know?
Yeah. And the thing that got me the most was watching this show go from, like, auspicious beginnings to, like, this like point where, you know, it got to be where they were like, they were doing these sketches, and the last show of the season, of that second season, we're gonna probably stop here for the second season because they did a sketch. It begins with them saying, "Her Majesty the Queen is watching tonight, and we want you to all know that, you know, she's... if she is watching, we will stop and we will." So they do, the sketch starts out with the toad elevating moment, which is Harry Jones is sitting there, says, "Now we have a man who only speaks the beginnings of words." He's like, "Good if," and then we have a man who speaks the ends of words and the middles of words. So it's the formula, "Get old evening."
Wow.
It jumps to a guy who steals bird watchers, right? Then it jumps to then it jumps to a lifeboat sketch where they're all going to eat each other.
Oh yes.
And you can
with a gammy leg. I've
never seen that sketch.
You have to eat the leg, Thompson.
I can't eat Thompson, sir. Why? He's not kosher.
We should all quit arguing and eat me.
We should all stop bickering and eat me. And then they're like, the waitress comes out and says, "Stop it! Stop it! We'll stop this right now." It's like, I think that's the one where they have the patients recuperating in the hospital.
I think so.
Yes,
they're all doing like physical labor and stuff like that. "I know you see some hospitals where patients are resting, recuperating, but we don't do that here. No, no, we're not a bunch of mummies, boys, are we?" they do that sketch, and then they pop into they do like this really sick animation that Gilliam did, and then they said, "Let's have something decent." So it goes into. Cleese walks in. He's like, hello, yes. I've come to bury my mother." Now you got to realize, I think Jones said either his mother was sick or his mother was dying at the time, or she just died. And the sketch goes, "Yes, well, can I take a look at her? Yeah, she's quite young. Oh yeah, yeah. Were you fond of her?" "Yes, yes, I was. Let me take a look at her." But he looks in the bag, he says, "Fred, yeah, I think we got to eat her.
You got to eat her.
Yeah.
Bug the oven on."
No, I love when he says, "Well, what are you going to do? Well, first she could be buried. where she, you know, put in the ground with you know, lots of worms and maggots and weevils, which is
pretty shocking.
Not quite good. and then there's Wicked Burner. Yeah, we could put it in the oven, crackle, snip, you know, put on the flames, crackle, and yeah, we're still in shock. She's not quite dead. Well, she really is dead. Oh, okay. And he looks in the mirror. Fred. Yeah, I think we gotta eat her. Are you proposing to eat my mother? Yeah, not raw. Yeah,
not raw.
The look on Graham Chapman's face was like, he's like, you know, like he's trying like hard not to say anything, like trying hard not to crack up. It's like fresh, you know, nice parsnips, fresh broccoli, few French fried potatoes. Well, come to it. I think you're a bit peckish. Well, that's good. He's like, no, I can't do it. I can't. Well, don't worry. We'll if you get sick, we'll put, if you don't want to do it, we'll dig a hole in the ground and you can throw up in it. And I sat there. I watched this episode. Now, all of a sudden, people rush the stage, right? And you think it's really the audience. It's actually friends of theirs. And they come in, and Her Majesty's theme kicks in, and they all have to sit there, and the camera pans across the crowd, and they're all smiling and laughing because they know it's not true, you know. But I think that episode, they got in trouble for it. I mean, there were some episodes they were kind of like, look, does John Cleese have to say bastard like 5 times?
Really?
You have to do this, or you have to do that, you know. But this one was like the one where they were like pushing the envelope a little bit, you know, because you're talking about like cannibalism, like, you know, eating the dead and stuff like that. And the BBC got like really, really uptight about it. And that was the problem, they said. They said a lot of times those first couple seasons, they had the BBC breathing down their necks.
Well, good way to kill creativity.
Yeah. Well, they were all just like, fuck it, let's just do it anywhere, you know. Let's just do it anyway. Let's just play. They were actually, you know, they'd get called into the office. They'd be like, "All right, look, we went over this script, and there's so much stuff in here we have to cut out." And there was stuff they did cut out. If you ever watched the one with How Not to Be Seen, there's part that was cut out where you see Satan come out of the ground and says, "Hey, anybody want to buy? Oh, by the way," and it cuts up, and it's like Jesus on the cross with the two other guys, and there's like telephone wire between them, and he says, "Oh, I think we got a bad connection here," you know, like that kind of thing.
Wow.
And we were all just kind of like, I just kind of looked and I went, you know, I'm stifling a laugh when I'm watching it, but you know, there's a lot of things. Like, here's the thing: Python, those first two seasons, was telling you not to laugh at things, not to laugh at things that are not meant to be laughed at. You know,
yeah.
Like there's the one episode, the bishop.
The bishop,
where it's like this, like crime fighting bishop, you know, or Hell's Grannies.
Yeah.
From the first scene. You know, the one I love is, you know, when they do the bishop, well, he was too late. The Reverend Grundy bit the ceiling, you know. The one with, You're No Fun Anymore, if you've ever seen that one. like there's this one part when he says, you know, Cleese is introducing Idol. He's a camel spotter, but he's really a train spotter. And he goes, "Oh, you're no fun anymore." And it cuts to like Eric Idle being with, he's like, 30, 35, 40. And he says, "Take him from the yard arm, Mr. Johnson. Oh, you're no fun anymore." Like Dracula comes in, like he goes to bite the girl, and his teeth fall into the girl's like cleavage, and he goes, she goes, "Oh, you're no fun anymore."
Oh man, it just goes on and on and on. It never gets old.
Well, the third season's going to be the pivot point, because, you know, if we look at those first two seasons, you know, great sketch writing, great ways they were looking at it. I mean, there's some things in there, like it's just like real one-offs, like, you know, It's a Living, the beginning of, you know, the game show, where Eric Idle explains the rules and there's, you know, that's it. The game's over. Good night, everybody. You know.
Oh, yeah. The whole show is that. Yeah. What do you think? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what else we I keep. I don't.
Are you embarrassed easily is on the records. Was that ever on the show? It's all a part of growing up and being.
No.
That, yeah. Some of this is only on record. Okay.
Yeah. The stuff they did on record was stuff they were doing after Cleese Leaves left the show or they were doing in between the show. Because I have the first, I had the first two records on CD.
Yeah.
And they were great.
Vinyl over here too, I think. I'm pretty sure.
I've got to get those because I've heard about them, but I've never listened to any.
And then there's Monty Python's Contractual Obligation album, which is there's some really push album stuff on there.
Just making fun of stuff you're required to perform.
The John Denver bit is hysterical, but I don't think I want to repeat it here.
All right, so next time.
If you heard it, you know what I'm talking about.
Next time, we'll you dive came into on my pill. Okay, I promise we will go hard into the records. We'll go into season 3 and 4. We'll go into some of the other reunion specials. I guess season episode 3, we can get into the movies and other reunions. But this has been great, guys. Anyone want to promote anything before we take off?
I'd like to promote I'd like to promote the Amnesia Conference. That was it. I forgot where it was.
A sense of deja vu.
It's a weird sense of deja vu, the strange thing you get if something's been done over and over again. Hello, good evening. Tonight on Mixed Up Night, we look at deja vu. That strange feeling you get that something's been done before. Hello, good evening.
I love the way they react because it all of a sudden occurs to them. They just repeated themselves. And
they're not in on their own joke.
Yeah. It works on so many levels.
Yep. Really Kids in the Hall would not exist without these guys. It's been great, guys. It's been so much fun. And pretty soon, JJ is going to launch his own podcast, too.
Awesome
stuff. Oh, are you actually going through with that?
Yeah. My friend Mike said he would co-host when he could, but I would love to have a co-host, if he can't make it, somebody else come in and just talk about stuff, because he may not be able to make it all the time. That's the thing.
A podcast that could talk about stuff.
I know for one thing, we can definitely get Laughs Unlimited, former nightclub owner Scott Edwards. He would love to talk all these retro comedians with you for sure.
Oh, yeah. I got it. There's one comedian I'd love to talk about, and that's Norm Crosby, who's I've seen some of Norm Crosby's stuff, and it's hilarious. He mispronounces all the words. He's like, I always said, I wanted to have Norm Crosby speak at my graduation. and I want you people to know that this day is a giant millstone for all of you.
That's called a malapropism. I was in a play in junior high called The Rivals, and that's where there was a Mrs. Malaprop character, and that's where that term came from. Because she would mispronounce words or use the wrong word.
Oh, that's great.
Based on that character in that play, that teacher told us that.
JJ was also saying off air that he demonstrated the Ministry of Funny Walks to a class, and everyone in high school is like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, my senior year, I was like doing the silly walk, and only a couple people got it.
It's a very good workout if you ever try it.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you should have got out the fish and started slapping them or something.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey,
what are you in the principal's office for? My teacher, they don't get it. Slap some sense.
What are you in the principal? Slap somebody with a fish. Oh, halibut? No, didn't hurt him that bad.
You again. Bloody hell.
The seven brides for seven brothers. Behold, the seven brides. Yeah, I was just thinking about that tonight. I was thinking, like, how many sketches can we fit tonight that are so good? And it's like,
it's so hard, dude. I was thinking of so many others, and then I was just trying to think of how can we
I
make this make sense.
I mean, I don't have the kind of recall that you have, JJ.
No, it's all right. It's okay.
I remember when you called him
up. JJ is a human record.
Yep.
All right.
Is this the argument clinic we're looking at here?
I think we are. It looks like it.
Yeah, we'll be looking at the argument.
Stop that. I'm not arguing. Yes, you are. Go ahead.
What are you an argument?
What do you want?
It is
contradiction.
No, it isn't.
Graham Chapman in that sketch is so funny. He's the first one who walks in and says, what do you want? What do you want, lousy parrot droppings? Your tongue makes me puke.
I think that's why he just always scared me. He's often the straight man, and then when he's the instigator in these scenes, you're like, oh, he's starting the fire this time.
Well, I love in the argument where he says that's not an argument, and he's actually acts a little surprised, like, it isn't? But he yes, and then he keeps arguing, but then also he realizes, you know, he might be right. You know, it's contradiction. You know, you can sense that in his character. It was brilliant. You know, the writing was so cool.
Perfectly pitched.
Yeah.
Next time we get into another share of physical comedy censorship by. No, we won't. Yes, we did. It's almost like the questions only portion of Whose Line. We'll get into all other sorts of animation, other rule breaking, and other stuff that makes this. Now timeless cult classic, just classic comedy. So thank you all for joining in the fun and the mayhem. And we'll see you guys on the next panel.
All right. Cool. See you around.
We'll return after these messages.
The Jacked Up Review Show podcast is honored to be part of the Blind Knowledge Podcast Network. Join anytime, talk the talk, and enjoy yourselves. There's something enlightening for everyone with this crowd of cool cats. Check them out.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, give it up, Jimmy. You got to sink this putt to win. On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and foodie debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's Breakfast time. Listen at Breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.